TMJ.
Start now.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. He's a true... Northern California town of Danville, ready with an all-American hero's welcome.
The sign here says it all. Danville welcomes home our hometown hero. This will be the first appearance by Sully Sullenberger since he became the hero of the Hudson. Hundreds of people are here. This woman has lived in Danville for 40 years.
The good guy being celebrated, you know. So it's nice. It's nice to come and see something like this that doesn't happen very often, especially in your own hometown.
There will be a marching band, an honor guard, and Sully, as his friends call him, is expected to make a few remarks, his first public comments. Steve Futterman, CBS News at the Town Green in Danville, California.
The time for economic recovery is now.
If we do not act boldly and swiftly, a bad situation could become dramatically worse.
President Obama kind of lobbying the country today, subject of his first weekly radio and internet address as president, passage of his $800 billion plus economic stimulus package. Republican leaders call it too costly and not immediate enough with tax relief. House Minority Leader John Boehner.
We let families, entrepreneurs, small businesses, and the self-employed keep more of what they earn to encourage investment and create millions of new private sector jobs.
And despite Republican recalcitrance, though, Democrats say they've got the votes to pass their package and get it onto the president's desk by mid-February. In Barcelona today... Recovery efforts after 100-mile-an-hour winds collapsed a sports center, killing four kids, injuring 16, a total of 15 deaths now reported in Spain and France due to the freak winds. Deadly avalanche in Scotland today.
Avalanches are quite vicious beasts to begin with, and they kill about 20-25% of the people who are taken in them.
Avalanche expert Harry Schneewind there. Three climbers killed in the near blizzard conditions in Scotland. Recall expansion. The phone message from Whole Foods today.
Whole Foods Market today announced a recall of its Whole Foods Carob Energy Nuggets in four states because they have the potential to be contaminated with salmonella.
As part of the growing recall of salmonella-contaminated peanut butter products, seven deaths, more than 600 people sickened by this stuff, and now a company is recalling the doggy treats they make for the same reason, Happy Trails multi-flavored dog biscuits. If you've got them, throw them out. Engagement ring cost $78,000, so the California couple was understandably upset when she lost the 7-carat diamond ring down a toilet in a Phoenix, Arizona restaurant. Several plumbers said it wouldn't work. They tried several ways. Finally, General Manager Mike Roberts of Mr. Rooter took a video camera with an infrared light attached to a 125-foot rod, and bingo.
It was so bright. It was like a star almost inside of the sewer line.
90 minutes of jackhammering. Later, the ring was rescued, washed off, and back on the finger of a very happy woman. The cost of retrieval and repair, $7,000. This is CBS News.
Our online lives are even more vulnerable than our real lives, especially when it comes to the nightmare of identity theft.
I call the year after I got my identity stolen my lost year. Every day, another phone call to a bank, the DMV, credit card companies, it's like I had a second job.
Don't become a victim. Get Identity Guard Total Protection with ID Vault. Protect yourself with patented internet scanning technology that alerts you of potential identity theft. And with ID Vault, lets you make your passwords, screen names, and credit card numbers virtually impossible to steal when you're online. Identity Guard Total Protection with ID Vault. Serious 21st century stuff for 21st century crime. Get total protection. Call 877-600-2669. Sign up now and get Identity Guard Total Protection with ID Vault free for 30 days. Just pay shipping and handling. Call 877-600-2669 today. That's 877-600-2669 or visit identityguard.com.
Okay, so it's happened. For whatever reason, you need a lawyer. And you want someone who's experienced, who's versatile, who will protect you, who will appreciate your business. Get the help you need with the Law Office of Dale R. Bruder. For over a quarter century, the Law Office of Dale R. Bruder has specialized in family law, including divorce, child custody, and adoption, wills, trust, and other estate planning, and real estate law. In fact, they are the counsel to the Tulare County Association of Realtors, serving brokers, agents, and sellers. Utilizing a network of specialists, paralegals, and skilled staff, the Law Office of Dale R. Bruder offers a combined experience that can't be matched in the Valley. Call today, 559-733-3727, or visit DaleRBruder.com. Because the lawyer you choose is important, and you need someone with the knowledge and expertise to serve you. the law office of Del Arbruder, online at delarbruder.com.
News Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, coming to you each and every Saturday afternoon here on News Talk 580 KMJ and KMJ580.com. Each week we visit with veterans of World War II. We want to honor their service to our country. We want to preserve their stories for posterity and hopefully in the process inspire the rest of us to live up to the legacy of service given to us by our greatest generation. A member of that generation with us today, Vern Schmidt, is the commander of the local chapter of the American Ex-Prisoners of War. He was never a prisoner of war. How did that happen? We're going to figure that story out. It's a very involved story and might take us the whole program to weave our way through it. But Vern has been as active as anyone in honoring the service of World War II veterans and helping other veterans out and exploring the history years since World War II. He's one of my favorite people in the world, and I'm very pleased to have Vern on with us today. Vern, let's start where I start with all the veterans. My first question, one of my favorite questions to ask, is December 7th, 1941, the day America was drawn into the war by the attacks on Pearl Harbor. What do you remember about that day? Where were you, and did it mean anything to you at the time when you heard about the attacks on Pearl Harbor?
Well, it was a Sunday afternoon when we got the news. Another fellow and I, we were walking up Main Street in Reedley following church service in the morning. And we heard the news from a grocery store as we were walking by, and it was a surprise, and yet you know, we knew things were happening, but you know, I was a junior in high school, 16 years old, and things really changed after that.
And how many children in your family?
I have two boys and one daughter.
I mean, when you were growing up. Now, you had a brother that would also serve.
I had a brother and an older brother and a younger sister.
So your older brother ended up in the war before you did.
My brother preceded me over to Europe in about a little over 2 months. And we tried to communicate with one another, but my letters didn't get to him and his letters didn't get to me. And it wasn't until middle of March of 45 that I even learned his whereabouts or what his whereabouts were. And it was a War Department letter to my parents, who lived in Reedley at the time, notifying that he had been taken off the missing in action status and now put on prisoner of war status, and that he was somewhere in a Stalag in Germany.
Meanwhile, you'd been in for a little bit. Now, I want to touch on that briefly before we talk more about your service. So you were trying to write letters to him. He was trying to write letters to you. Nothing was getting through. Did you have any idea if he was okay or where in the world he was?
No. You remember back then, our communications didn't move as quickly and as forcibly as we see them today. It was strictly by mail. We didn't have any phone service. In fact, my parents didn't even have a telephone. So everything was, you know, done by the mail. And that's how I heard about it. Just two weeks prior to his liberation did I know he was actually a prisoner of war. I had assumed something was amiss because I had received no communication. We'd been close as brothers, and I had expected something, and also my parents had only received notice prior to his liberation that he was MIA. So looking back now, it's hard to realize that communications were not proficient at that time.
You couldn't call each other on your cell phones. Didn't work quite like that back then.
You're right there.
And when I've talked to some brothers who had brothers in the service, and even those of POWs, and some of them cited that as a motivation for getting in, that they wanted to go over there and bring their brother back. And I've actually interviewed a guy who was able to do something close to that. But for you, you didn't know anything about that, and Uncle Sam got a hold of you anyway. How did you end up in the U.S. Army?
Well, I graduated from Reedley High School in 1943 and tried to enlist in the Air Force right out here at Fresno at Hammer Field at the time. And Air Force training was done in cycles, and if you, I guess, if you lucked out in the right cycle, you were called up. I was not, and it was evident that we were gaining a real upper hand in our aircraft, in our status over there in Europe. So I wound up as an infantryman, although everything in the Air Force I did, I passed, but I was put into infantry and took infantry training at Camp Roberts, California, and supposedly 17 weeks, but due to the acceleration at the time of the bulge in Europe, we were cut short one night and sent home. And 2 weeks from the day I boarded the Queen Mary in New York, I was on the front lines fighting two enemies. One was the Germans, the other was the weather. So it all happened it was in a hurry.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about that, both the Germans and the weather, and your friendship with one of the Germans that technically you guys were fighting over there that has survived all these decades and been revived, in fact. But before you left for Europe, you had a girlfriend here in the Valley that you were pretty fond of.
Yes, we'd been going together for a little over a year, and we talked about marriage, and yet we were just both 18 years of age, and we just made a decision that we would wait. So the night before I left home here in Reedley, I gave her an engagement ring, and I says, when I get back, we'll tie the knot. And at that time, really not knowing what that entailed, but you know,
didn't know if you would ever see her again.
That's true. You didn't know that, but you know, that billboard used to say, "Uncle Sam is called, and I must go."
Well, and we'll leave the listeners hanging for a little bit to get the other end of that story with Donna, your sweetheart, back in 1944, and only about a month from the day that you proposed to her, gave her that ring and said, here's the ring, but I'm going overseas. About a month later, there you are on the Siegfried Line.
Exactly. I gave her the ring on January the 8th, and on February the 8th, I was in a pillbox in Hopscheid, Germany, ready to go.
Ready to go, indeed. Did you really feel ready to go? Were you a little nervous? I mean,
well, I had read that many of the divisions that formed up after they got into England, especially, did additional training. But and I kind of expected that probably would happen. But when I got to Scotland, we traveled by train around to Southampton, England, got on an American ship, went across to the bombed out harbor there at Le Havre. And rappelled over the side of this American ship into a Higgins boats that carry about 50 guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we just rammed up on the beach there at Le Havre. And from there, we boarded the old famous 40 and 8 boxcars, cold as old Billy get out, and snow coming through the cracks in the of this old rickety 40 and 8, and we rode for 3 days.
And it doesn't snow much in Reedley, does it?
No, we can see it in the mountains, but that was about it.
You weren't quite ready for that. And for those who don't know, and regular listeners to this program, I've heard an entire show about 40 and 8 boxcars, and the one that's in Fresno, preserved outside American Legion Post 509. But that's called 40 and 8 because it could fit 40 men or 8 horses. They used them in World War I, transported troops all over the place. Not exactly a Pullman. Didn't quite have those accommodations for you.
Didn't see any windows in it, but it had cracks for the snow to get through, and a little bucket in the corner for you-know-what. That's about it.
Now, at this time, you're still just a young kid, a teenager. Are you feeling a sense of adventure about all of this, or are you starting to get a little anxious and thinking, this could be it for me, I might not live to see 20 years old?
Well, you know, you're young, so every day was an adventure, so to speak, but there was a lot of unknowns. I had never been out of the state of California until I got in the service. So, you know, we were, I guess you'd say, we were considered sheltered. So, it might have been an adventure, but it was so cold you didn't have a chance to enjoy the adventure. And I became ill on that 48 and had, you know, you had to chill because it was so cold. So it was totally different from what it was right here in California at the time.
I would say so. Night and day would be the comparison. Well, we're going to talk about, when we come back, what you did after that, when you were serving with the 90th Infantry Division. Vern Schmidt is our guest today. We'll have more of his story and how it's come full circle in the years since World War II. You're listening to Hometown Heroes today on Newstalk 580 KMJ. You won't find the town of Alveston on any map of the valley, and no, it's not in Texas either, but it is on the World Wide Web. Go to Alveston.com and take a tour of the virtual town where if the grass is green, the water's clean, and electricity won't cost you a thing. Whether you prefer red states or blue states, you'll see the value of building green. Go to Alveston.com, that's Alveston.com, to see for yourself how you can save your money and save your planet at the same time. Alveston.com, your source for green construction.
News Talk 580 KMJ with the best listeners in the Central Valley.
You guys do a great job. I've been listening to you for many years.
I just had a comment about a caller yesterday that really struck a nerve with me.
You know it's a lie.
You don't want to argue because you're basically a chicken.
Well, thank you.
And that's why I continue to listen to your show.
Thank you for once again making us the number one station in Central California.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby.
Congratulations.
The big one is 580 KMJ.
Money.
Hey,
money,
what are you doing?
Just thinking about one of my favorite things.
And what's that?
Money.
Buster's giveaway, where two lucky people will win $4,000 a month for the rest of the year.
Wow, you can really bust up your bills pretty good with that kind of cash.
I know, and I've got some bills that are cruising for a bruising.
Hi. Oh, yeah. So what are you waiting for? Let's get up there right now and bust some bills.
I'm there.
Chachansey's Bill Buster's giveaway. Earn tickets daily for a chance to win your share of $110,000, including $4,000 a month for the rest of the year. Grand prize drawing till February 13th and 16th. So get to Chachansey today and start earning tickets and say goodbye to Bill. Let Chachansey pay your bills for the rest of the year with Chachansey's Bill Buster's giveaway.
Congratulations, you've decided to purchase a home, and whether this will be your first or third, it's a big step. So you want to make sure you make the right choice. Well, at McCaffrey Homes, we've been building in the Central Valley for three generations, so we have a pretty good idea what's important to the people who live here. Things like exceptional style, quality that we stand behind, and of course, unbeatable value. That's the McCaffrey Homes difference. We think you'll like it. We know you deserve it.
It's the grand opening of Poets Crossing from McCaffrey Homes on Saturday, January 24th. Enjoy live radio broadcasts and a chance to win tickets to Southern California's favorite amusement park. Big on features, Poets Crossing offers an all-new look with six new models and prices from just the high 100s. Save even more with grand opening specials and no closing costs. See for yourself at the grand opening of Poets Crossing on Saturday, January 24th at Gettysburg and Hayes in Northwest Fresno. Learn more at McCaffreyHomes.com. Equal housing opportunity, prices and terms subject to change.
Every time I profess my love for Indian food and the North India Bar and Grill, I am besieged with email from people who want me to suggest dishes. Okay, I am happy to oblige. So over the next month or however long it takes, I am going to lay out a number of different dishes from the North India Bar and Grill for your unfamiliar palate so you won't be afraid anymore to try this cuisine. Today's Ray Appleton suggestions are appetizers from the North India Bar and Grill. Chicken pakoras and Bombay pakoras. Bombay pakoras are squid. These are delicately fried bits of meat with Indian spices. They melt in your mouth. Simply put, if you're a fan of chicken nuggets, if you're a fan of fried calamari, you are going to love these pakoras. Next, you go to the child's menu to find this. Onion bhajis. These are like onion rings, only so much better. And you must try the onion salad with green chilies and cilantro. Coming up, the entrees. The North India Bar and Grill on the south side of Shaw between Minnewawa and Villa.
On the front- front line of freedom. You are listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Army veterans will recognize that tune performed there by our friends with the Sounds of Freedom Band here locally. They have a concert coming up. I'll let you know about it. Great band of people volunteering their time, ages 15 to 90, if you can believe that. They play all the service tunes. Every one of their concerts is a great deal of fun. And it's a great deal of fun today to be sharing this time with Vern Schmidt of Fresno. When we left off, he had arrived in Europe, anyway, in France, as a 19-year-old infantryman assigned to E Company, 358th Regiment of the 90th Infantry Division, serving under General Patton, and the U.S. Third Army at that point. And this was fairly late in the war. What month was this again, Vern?
This was the first week in February of 1945. Our division had just broke through the Siegfried Line from Belgium into Germany, and the pillbox I was brought into after dark was right on the border in a little town that had taken 5 days to secure. Town probably of about 1,000 people, little farming community. But those pillboxes, and I learned by being over there this last year with a historian telling us that there was over 125 pillboxes just in the area of this little town of Hubscheid. So
this was originally a German pillbox that taken over?
This was Hitler's West Wall called the Siegfried Line, which was 400 miles of pillboxes and tank obstructions and objects to slow down our forces.
A whole lot of concrete.
A lot of concrete. And they're still standing over there.
And you actually occupied that pillbox to watch out for German forces?
Well, we was taken into the pillbox mainly for a cover over our head for the night, because the following morning at 6 o'clock, the sergeant I reported to said, "We'd just make yourself comfortable here in this pillbox, because 6 o'clock in the morning, we all jump off." And I wasn't sure what he meant by that, but in the morning at 6 o'clock, I certainly found out. We jumped off and began taking one pillbox at a time until we had literally accomplished our mission, which was to take hold and secure each pillbox, make sure they were free of Germans, and make it secure for us to keep moving eastward.
Did you meet with any resistance?
We had sporadic resistance. This was now only a couple of weeks following the climax and the catastrophic efforts or events that happened at the Battle of the Bulge. So the Germans had tenacity, but I actually feel that many of them felt for them the war was lost. But because of the fanaticism in their Nazi regime, those men were told they had to fight to the finish. And we found that out from that area clear into the closing weeks in Czechoslovakia. So there was that determination to hold off, because Hitler said there's a secret weapon coming. And
thankfully, the United States was able to use its secret weapons eventually, and Hitler did not.
That's right.
The pillboxes that you described, maybe you can paint a picture for our listener. I mean, we've heard the legendary stories about how they were able to withstand the bombing by the Americans, that the solid concrete made them in many cases impenetrable. What was it like to be inside of one of those? How big was it, and did it feel cramped? What was that like? Was it a surreal thing to go inside where you knew so many German troops had been?
Well, they were of various sizes. The one I went into probably would say 20 feet by 20 feet square, just a concrete building with a couple of supports in the middle. And we, of course, the Americans, to secure some of them without having to physically go inside, would first destroy their ventilation system, and that was by dropping what we call the Molotov cocktail, a bottle of gasoline and a charge, and drop it in the ventilation system, which destroyed that, and then the building became just a cold box without any type of lighting, communication, or heat, and the walls would begin to just drip with water. In fact, that's the first thing I noticed. I thought the water was just running down the walls because of that. And so they were cold, they were damp, because they were all concrete, and just a big old concrete floor. There was others that were smaller. Some were merely just gun emplacements, where maybe just a gun crew would be quartered inside. But a lot of them, like the one I just described, were about 20 foot square.
And you're armed with an M1?
I had an M1. Well, I joined with a carbine because I had trained as a cannoneer and with a little 105 howitzer, which the infantry used, and that required a man to carry a carbine. So I insisted when I received my weapon there in Metz that I get a carbine. But the first couple of days, my sergeant noticed that I was carrying a carbine, and he asked, Schmidt, what are you doing with that pop gun? You can't destroy anything with that. So he said, trade with the guy that's carrying the bazooka. So we did. I gave him the carbine to make a little lighter load for him, and I carried the M1. It was so rusty you could not see through the barrel. But first time I needed it, it never missed a round. It was a great weapon. Great weapon that we had.
Now, I want to talk more about the events that you started to describe there with waking up at 6 in the morning and jumping off, as they told you. But I do want to jump ahead briefly here. I want to try to keep it somewhat chronological, but you mentioned that you had just recently been back to Germany. And, in fact, you were able to find the exact pillbox that you had been in?
Yes, yes, we did. My son and I were there with two other fellows in June. We had spent some time at Normandy, and then we went into Germany. And I told my son, I said, let's see if we can't find my pillbox from 60-some years back. And I knew where it was because I've been back there twice before, in 1964 and 1993. So I knew where it was. And now, of course, it was mostly undergrowth and trees surrounding it. But no trees grew on top of the pillbox. It was just undergrowth of weeds and so forth. So I knew where it was, and I kept directing my son. I said, just keep going a little bit farther, and you'll see where the cement drops off. And sure enough, he hollered. He said, Dad, I found a piece. It's painted green, and it's square, and it's got wire reinforcing. And so we celebrated a little bit, and he busted a couple of pieces off, and I brought them home.
Good for you. They clearly don't want to hold on to it there, so I'm glad that you have a little piece of history to hold on to. What did that mean to you, to be there again? I'm sure it's kind of hard to describe.
The first time in 64 with my wife, it was very emotional. First off, the Germans told us we wouldn't find them, but I had a good recollection of where it was, and they had blown the tops out of them to destroy as much as they could, and then they pushed dirt in front to hide them, but I found it. You could actually crawl into it if you wanted to, but they were the walls were anywhere from 3 to at least 3 feet thick, all rebar, so they were very tough to destroy, but they had blown the tops off. But to come there again, this is my third time. I could my mind whipped back to February of 45, and I recall how cold it was, and the snow and the rain, and and then to have my son with me, it was emotional, but it was a time, I felt kind of a closing. Now my son knew where I actually was, and this was many years before he was ever born.
Well, and he never would have been born if you hadn't survived that night in the pillbox, or what happened afterwards. Now, you talked about jumping off at 6 in the morning. You had to get out of there in quite a hurry. I understand you left a few things behind.
Well, we all came, all of us replacements came with a walking quartermaster. We had a barracks bag plumb full of everything, two of everything, of our clothes, with the exception of shoes. And I had a whole carton of dentine gum, which I liked. I had all kinds of writing equipment and my shaver, and I had a nice picture of Donna, and I had left everything inside as the sergeant said, everybody out. And I asked him, I said, are we coming back here? And he said, not unless the Krauts push us back. And I said, well, I left some good things in there. And he said, well, you better go back and just remember, whatever you have, you carry. So I went back, and I got a fountain pen and toothbrush and my wife's 5x7 picture, which was in a frame. And
she wasn't your wife yet.
She wasn't, but she meant a lot to me then, even.
And she still does. We can give away that part of the story. We'll talk more about it later. But the rest of that day, and as you moved on trying to take more and more pillboxes, as you said, you guys encountered quite a bit of enemy fire, and at one point I understand you were pinned down.
Yes. The night times were the roughest. We never knew where we were going to stay because you had accomplished a mission that was programmed for you, and hopefully you could accomplish that mission on a day-to-day basis. But the Germans knew exactly where we were because they had been there just hours before or maybe a day before. So they had us pretty well zeroed in, both by machine gun fire and at times sniper fire and mortars and also artillery. But it was scary. The nights were the most scary because you didn't know really where you were. Many times we didn't even have a shelter to get into. I've slept under bushes, and I've slept in makeshift foxholes, and I've slept in German-made foxholes, and woke up in the morning to find a dead German in the hole. I wondered why he never spoke or never said a thing all night, but in the morning, turned out to be a dead German. So for a kid 19 years old, it was tough. You yearn for your friends at home and my wife-to-be and my parents. Being a replacement, you never really got to know the people because you just lined up in. Three of us joined that very same night. In 10 days, I was the only one alive out of those three. Mm-hmm. And I really only got to know one of those really well because we had trained together at Camp Roberts. So those were tough days for a kid to walk away and leave your buddy laying there just almost cut to shreds with our German artillery. They had a gun called the 88, and we became very conscious that of the accuracy. We said if they saw you, they could put it in your back pocket, and I believe that. It was an accurate, straight trajectory, and it exploded before you heard the muzzle blast mm-hmm. from the gun itself, and it was a wicked piece that they had, and scary. It was scary, especially at night when you didn't know where you were. And a couple of times, one time to be exact, Axis Sally got on the loudspeaker at night, and we began to snow, and I was just under a bush with my raincoat, and she began talking to us and telling us how nice it would be to have a nice warm bed and a nice hot meal, and that we were surrounded by Germans, soldiers, and all we needed to do was surrender, and everything would be just like a brand new life with us. We'd be nice and warm. We'd have a hot meal, which is those two things we never really saw hardly at all until the war was over.
On a certain level, that's pretty tempting, isn't it?
It's tempting, but I think we were trained that there would be a propaganda machine trying to wean us away or mm-hmm. sympathize or get our attention. But by morning, we had not surrendered. We were covered with snow, but another day in the battle in the woods.
Well, and we're very thankful that that was your approach. We need to take another commercial break. We'll come back with more of Vern Schmidt's story today. Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Alveston.com isn't a website under construction. It's a website about construction, green construction. From windows to water heaters, solar panels to skylights, the friendly folks of Alveston will show you how to put the green in your machine. As this virtual town grows, your business can grow with it. If your business helps people save money by saving energy, Alveston.com is the place to be. See what the buzz is all about. Tour Alveston today at alviston.com. Alveston, your source for green construction.
Connect Tech Support Plus from AT&T makes anyone an instant technical genius.
Why won't you print my resume?
Connect Tech Support Plus.
Instant genius.
Hey, who's the man now, printer? I am, thank you.
Call the U.S.-based experts at Connect Tech 7 days a week. For problems too big for the phone, they'll even make house calls.
Oh, this stupid program is acting up again.
Connect Tech Support Plus.
Hi.
Instant genius.
Is it hot in here, or is it my unfrozen computer?
Connect Tech tackles the toughest tech questions over the phone.
Dude, where's that song? I just downloaded.
Connect Tech Support Plus.
Instant genius.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. Let's celebrate with a little air guitar.
Connect Tech Support Plus from AT&T. Technology support for you and your home. Call 1-800-344-1934 or go to att.com/connect tech.
Residential customers only, not available in all areas. Hardware and software limitations apply. Terms and conditions apply. See att.com/connect tech for terms and conditions.
Thank you very much.
Crime Stoppers is extremely important for us.
Crime Stoppers is making such a big difference in reducing crime in Fresno County.
Fresno Police Chief Jerry Dyer and Sheriff Margaret Mims understand the value of Valley Crime Stoppers, an anonymous tip line that pays citizens for tips that lead to an arrest.
The simple fact is we have a mechanism in place that allows people to come forward, provide information, and remain 100% anonymous. And in turn, we provide them a substantial reward for that information.
Since its inception in 1993, Crime Stoppers tips have led to over 7,000 arrests and paid out nearly $900,000 in reward money.
What we will never know is the crimes that we've been able to prevent as a result of apprehending those individuals before they continue with a crime spree.
Do your part. Call 498-STOP or click valleycrimestoppers.org if you have any information.
And it's a way you can make a positive impact in reducing crime.
This message brought to you by Peak Broadcasting, the Fresno Bee, and KC24.
Do you remember your SATs? Remember all of the cramming and prep work that went into it? Suppose you had Mathnasium back then. Boy, would that have taken so much of the stress away from the SATs. Mathnasium is a math learning center which has put together a winning method of teaching math. Right now they're enrolling students for their 7-week focused SAT math prep course starting January 31st. It will give your student the extra confidence to win, but not only that, to succeed in life. Read about their winning track record and of their formula to get better grades at Mathnasium.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Ratley. At GSM for Westside Ford and Fireball, your little cheaper dealer. I started to advertise on 580 KMJ over 10 years ago, and I can honestly tell you it was one of the smartest things I've ever done. I keep very accurate records of where my buyers, notice I said buyers, come from. There are a lot of advertising sources available, but wanting to buy and being able to buy are entirely different. KMJ sends you qualified buyers, and my account rep, Christy Smith, can make it happen for you, too. Call her at 559-490-5806. No suits, no ties, and no lies.
Now, more Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, coming to you every Saturday. We're about halfway through with Vern Schmidt today. I don't think we'll be able to fit in all the numerous things that Vern's been involved with. He's done so much, both through his involvement with the American ex-prisoners of war locally, and just in tracking down people he served with or people that he didn't serve with that are interested in finding information. He's been a help to so many, and it's a privilege having him on today. I want to talk more about your story, Vern, and we heard Vern describe how his unit, part of the 90th Infantry Division, took pillbox after pillbox, moving deeper into German territory, eventually all the way to the Rhine River. For his efforts during that time of February 1945, he would later receive a Bronze Star, but he's not all about talking about that with us today. He's never seeking any attention. What I want to pay a little attention to is close calls. I always like asking veterans about the close calls. Some have a million of them. Some have one that really stands out. I imagine any time that a mortar shell comes pretty close to you, close enough to kill you, that probably stands out in your mind.
Yeah, you know, the thing about a mortar, you hear it go thump as it leaves the barrel, and then you sweat it out. Is this one aimed at me? or it's got my name on it. Well, one night we were in the woods and were, for all practical purposes, probably lost, waiting to have somebody find out by his map where we were. And I think accidentally he may have, under his shelter, maybe his flashlight might have given just a bit of light. Or maybe somebody's opened their Zippo lighter to light a cigarette. But anyway, it wasn't less than a minute, and incoming on us was mortars. And one, I was...
So they saw that little flicker of a light, and your position was given away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they, being they had been there just prior to us, they knew where we were. So they zeroed in on us, and another fellow and I, we found a hole, and we crawled, a foxhole, and we crawled into it, and one of the mortars came in, and it landed close enough to throw dirt all over both of us. So, you know, that had to be pretty close, but it didn't explode. And I found out later, talking to some slave laborers, why it didn't explode. But I also know why it didn't explode, because, you know, I had grown up in a very fundamental church. I had made I had found Christ as my Savior, and I believed that He was in control. Whatever happened was His control. And for that dud to land right by me, to me, that wasn't luck. That was divine providence, that I believe God said, I got something else for this guy to do, and He spared my life. And I found out later, talking to slave labor people who worked in munitions factories, they would leave a little screw loose or a little spring loose or something to foul up the detonation mechanism, and they felt they were helping the American cause, and I have to solidly agree, they certainly were helping the American cause. He said if they'd have found out, they'd have taken me out and shot me.
Wow.
But thank the good Lord that there were people like that who knew the Americans, their real intent was not to conquer, but was to do away with the Nazi regime and what it had done to their own people.
Amen. And thank the Lord for courageous acts like that by that slave laborer in the munitions factory. And I think that your life since 1945 has proven that God did have other plans for you. And one of the plans, at least one of the great joys that you would get to experience for too long, was learning that your brother had been liberated from his prisoner of war camp. And in fact, there's a connection with a unit that you served in, eventually being the one to liberate that camp.
Yes, that's probably why I joined many years back the American Ex-Prisoners of War organization. I felt my brother and I, we were very close. And I felt to honor him and his time spent in a POW cage, the least I could do is join this organization and be of some help. My unit, late in October of 45, was slated to go home to the United States and possibly to Japan. So I was transferred out in late October of 45 to a mechanized cavalry unit. And in later years, I saw two testimonies of two of the fellows who were liberated out of my brother's camp, who specified that it was the 2nd Mechanized Cavalry Squadron that had a part in his liberation, which incidentally happened on Easter Sunday. That, of course, is always a highlight to a Christian, because on Easter we celebrate Christ's resurrection. And my brother to come out of a prisoner of war camp, 90-some pounds, to me that was a brand-new resurrection of life to him, because the Germans told him when they went in that camp, says, you won't live here more than 6 months on what they feed you. Well, the good Lord saw that that war was over before 6 months, and he was down to 90 pounds, but happy to be liberated. And I served with the unit, meeting guys later who went into that camp, and that was thrilling. So that's my connection to the Ex-Prisoners of War organization.
And you've made so many connections with other veterans over the years. Another one of your good friends now is a gentleman who was part of the Hitlerjugend, the Hitler Youth, defending Leutenberg Castle. Before he was captured by the Americans, who he says now saved his life. You and he have kept in touch and are great friends. I know you've got friends all over the globe because of your interest and your care about the people who did such wonderful things so many years ago. I want to talk a little bit more about what you did during the war. And you've actually written a lot of your memories down and I've had this for quite some time, and I really like your introduction to your autobiography, and I might share that with our listeners later. But another story that you talk about, you're in a German city, and you follow your BAR man, Browning Automatic Rifle man, into a two-story house. And in this, you write that you suddenly felt a stinging sensation in your right foot. Were you just cramping up there?
Well, we had started into the city, which was the city of Mainz on the Rhine and Main River, in a city of about, at that time, of not quite a half a million. But we entered the city through an apple orchard, and then into the chicken coops, and the chicken coops into the first houses. And we had taken fire from the SS there for probably an hour or so, and we were laying in a prone position in this apple orchard. And finally, our artillery began to zero in on the Germans ahead of us, and then their artillery began to zero in behind us, so we were caught right in the middle. And so the only thing we had to do was get up and go. So our sergeant gave us a marching order to everybody at the marching order, which you just take your M1 at hip level and march and fire as you move along, which is pretty devastating when a whole group of guys get up and do that. And my BAR man and I, we ran to the first house to secure it, to see if there was any Germans in there. And there was nobody on the ground floor, so we went up the second floor. And as if some of you have been to Europe, you know their houses are very, very close to one another. As we came up on the second story and into a room and looked out, not more than 25 feet away was another house with the window just like ours, and there stood two big Germans with their helmets and everything. And I thought, oh man, these guys have seen us. And they ducked, and I turned to my BAR man, a big, tall Yugoslavian guy by the name of Mike, and I said, Mike, I said, those guys are going to come down and go into the cellar and come up and get us. And he edged himself over to the window, and I was right behind him. BAR out of the window, and sure enough, out came these two guys, and they were kind of trying to get into our basement. And I don't say this in boasting or trying to say we were macho, but he leaned that BAR out the window and did what we were trained to do, and that was you either kill or you be killed. And he fired off a part of a clip, and he looked back at me with a big grin. He said, Smitty, they ain't coming up. Again, I feel my life was spared. But that went on, you know, and going into the building, I either a sniper or some small arms fire got me just as I was going into the building, hit my boot, and I felt my foot just lift up automatically, and fortunately, all it did was graze the heel of my boot. Another inch or another 2 inches, and I might have had a hole through my ankle. But again, I firmly believe the good Lord is watching over, because too many things happen to me over there that don't just happen and aren't just luck. I just have to thank the good Lord that I knew him as my personal Savior, and I believed in whatever happened, he was in control.
I've got to ask you, and when, you know, I read through your story that you've written down and talked to you here, and we hear about the guys you were with who did not come home, and you, like so many veterans, have told me that the real heroes of World War II were the 400,000 Americans who never came home. You visited some of their graves across the pond. When you saw so many guys around you dying, when you were confronted with the death of friends and strangers, did it ever make you question your own mindset? Did it ever shake your faith at all, or your belief that you were going to find your way home?
Well, you know, if you say you weren't scared, you were lying, because I think we were all scared. But, you know, I guess there's strength in numbers. I guess you felt it won't happen to me. It'll be that guy next to me. And sure enough, that happened one day in the woods. I was the second scout, and we come up to a roadblock, and the first scout jumped over and walked ahead, and I was just ready to jump over the fallen tree, and a sniper behind a tree somewhere away blazed away at where I was, but my squad leader, sergeant, was probably about 10 feet from where I was, and he hit him instead of me, and I knew he was wounded. I learned later, in just a month or so, that he died of wounds over there. So again, I was scared. There's no doubt about it. But again, I think some days we were just too scared to have time to think about what was happening. We were on a mission. We were 10 or 12 men in a squad, and we were doing what we were told to do. And we just did it.
And I'm glad you did. And I'm glad we have a few more minutes left to talk about Vern Schmidt and his service to our country during World War II. We'll be right back with the rest of Hometown Heroes today on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Starting today, we must pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and begin again the work of remaking America. Today, I say to you that the challenges we face are real. They are serious, and they are many.
History.
But know this, America, they will be met.
News Talk 580 KMJ. News Talk 580 KMJ. Every day.
Wenn der Führer says, wie ist der Master Ace? Wie heil, heil. Right in the Führer's face, not to love the Führer is the greatest grace. So wie heil, heil.
How many of you remember that one by Spike Jones so many years ago? Vern Schmidt remembers it, and Vern, you actually remember a specific place and circumstance where you heard that on the phonograph.
On our way home in 1946, we went home out of the port of Bremerhaven, and we were in a big staging area, and there were a couple of days waiting for the ship and everything, processing, and huge loudspeakers all over the post, which would announce, call your name, come to shipping orders, come to the orderly room, come to this. But while they weren't calling us for anything, this Spike Jones music was being played, and we were being served by German prisoners of war, doing everything for us, making our bed, cooking our meal, and taking care of everything. And this music going on, all it had to be depressing to them, but it was so humorous and amusing to us. We need a little bit of excitement to cheer us up, and that song really spoke what we felt inside of us.
Understandably so. You know, you talked earlier about a month before you ended up on the Siegfried Line, you had proposed to your girlfriend Donna back in Reedley, and throughout the war, you two wrote letters to each other. You've saved all those letters?
We've saved, I never knew this till I got home, that she had, every letter I had, I just put them in a box once in a while and sent them home, because, you know, we didn't throw anything away in those days. And she, and the ones I wrote to her, of course, she saved. And so we had a whole big box of letters, and every now and then we open them up and share them together. We talk about different holidays and Easter and birthdays and Valentine's Day, the things we wrote in that time. Even during combat, you look back, and it's the things that held us together. Mail was such an important thing, and sometimes it took so long to get one that some days I would get 5, 6, and 7 letters at a time from her. And I'd rather read her letters than eat. But it was so comforting to know somebody at home saying, I love you. I can hardly wait till you get back home. And those were reassuring words, because 7,000 miles away, you once in a while you got a little depressed.
Understandably so. How long you been married now?
This year will be 63 years.
63 years. Do you remember the moment that you saw her again, when you got home from the war and this really was happening, you got to see your sweetheart again and you could go get married?
Right out in front of the Greyhound bus depot in Sacramento, California. I had got separated at Camp Beale, and took a bus into a Greyhound bus into town, and I had written about the time I would be discharged and so forth, and My folks had brought Donna up with her and my sister. Then my brother, who had been liberated, had now been living in Sacramento. So I had a rip-roaring family welcome when I got off that bus. And to see, I think I ran to Donna first because we had been separated over 19 months. And I tell you, she looked good, and she still does.
She does. I can vouch for that. And I'm sure she looked better that day than any day you could have remembered before that. We just have a few minutes left in the show, Vern, but I know another thing that's really special to you is the connection that you made with a German family. And we think so much about war, and it's easy to lose the humanity. But you got a sense when you guys had to occupy a German home, you go down to the basement and open the door to find about two dozen Germans huddled down there trying to stay warm. What was it that kind of gave you a common denominator and made you identify with that family?
My sergeant preceded me down there, and in the basement of the M1, he didn't know what he was going to find. But there, huddled around the whole bottom floor, there was all these people, about 25 of them, kids, older people, and whatever. And he noticed right away that they were civilians, and then he noticed a crucifix on the wall in their basement. And he looked around, and there was an elderly gentleman there, the father of the whole tribe. And he asked him, he said, "Are you Catholic?" And this German, in his German, said, "Ja, ich bin katholisch." And my sergeant, he reached in his field jacket, and he pulled out a rosary, and he held it up to them, and he says, "I'm Catholic too." And just that, those few words and eye contact, we had a bondage right there. For 3 days, we were in that home. We took a couple of machine gunnings because of some things that happened that it's too long to talk about.
Gave your position away, and they were shooting at you, sure.
But because of that, we went back in 64, we went back in 93, and that family treats us like their best things since they've seen since sliced bread. We are welcome in their home. Donna and I have stayed in that very same home, and their grandchildren have come to the United States twice to stay in our home and visit. Took them to Walmart, and they thought they were in heaven. And
our machine gun holes are still on the wall there?
Pardon me?
The machine gun holes are still on the wall of that home?
The lady took us, the daughter of the old gentleman, took us upstairs into into this room where I was in, and she said, "I will show you some souvenirs." And up on the wall, you can see the machine gun pockmarks are still on the wall going up the... up toward the ceiling, and even the wood footboard of the bed had a graze mark right straight through it. And while that was happening, I was laying on my belly on the floor, hoping that machine gun could not depress any lower because it was zinging right above my head. But it was exciting, but to come back now, it was great to meet these people who had no animosity for us. We were not their conquerors. We were their liberators. We liberated them from the Nazi regime. The old gentleman, as I mentioned, this was the first town that we ever encountered civilians. And this old gentleman had gone to his priest and said, "I know the Americans are near. Do we need to evacuate?" And the priest had said, "No, I feel that you will not be harmed. Stay in your home." And, you know, what a neat happening, both for us and for them. They were scared to death. They were told that the Americans would kill them. We didn't want to kill them. Our only mission was to get rid of Hitler and his Nazi people. And these people became fast friends, and I communicate with them monthly by email today, and we are the best of friends.
That is so beautiful. Unfortunately, Vern, we're out of time today, but thank you so much for being here. Thank you for serving our country then and for everything that you're doing now. Vern Schmidt, one of my heroes, our guest today on Hometown Heroes. We'll be back with another edition next week here on News Talk 580.
Okay, so it's happened. For whatever reason, you need a lawyer. And you want someone who's experienced, who's versatile, who will protect you, who will appreciate your business. Get the help you need with the Law Office of Dale R. Bruder. For over a quarter century, the Law Office of Dale R. Bruder has been family law, including divorce, child custody, and adoption. wills, trust, and other estate planning, and real estate law. In fact, they are the counsel to the Tulare County Association of Realtors, serving brokers, agents, and sellers. Utilizing a network of specialists, paralegals, and skilled staff, the Law Office of Dale R. Bruder offers a combined experience that can't be matched in the Valley. Call today, 559-733-3727, or visit DaleRBruder.com. Because the lawyer you choose is important, and you need someone with the knowledge and expertise to serve you. The Law Office of Dale R. Bruder, online at DaleRBruder.com.
This is the 50,000-watt information, weather, and traffic leader. Broadcasting's News Talk 580 KMJ Fresno.
The news starts now.
PBS News, I'm Sam Litzinger.